It's time for Views from Vegas with Scott Spritzer here on AM 590 ESPN Omaha.
Time to go out to Las Vegas. Welcome in the man, the myth, the legend, Scott Spritzer, DocSports.com, as we talk the latest in sports wagering. Scott, you're going to have to refresh my memory on the over-under in the Super Bowl and how big of an impact of a, 16-point total actually had with the bettors.
Yeah, the total went from 59 and a half when it opened. It closed around 56 and even saw a couple of 55.5s out there. So it was one of those deals, by the way, in the total where the public was all on the over. Over 60% of the tickets in most books were on the over, but the overwhelming amount of money, which means all the sharps, the six-figure bets on the total were on the under. So they did lose a little bit on the under as far as the books were concerned. Most books made about a 5% hold on the Super Bowl, but the handle with the 16 points being scored, a 13-3 game, the handle was about 10 to 12 million lower than it was last year in the state of Nevada. It was still the second highest Super Bowl handle ever, second to last year, but it was down 10 to 12 million. And one of the big reasons was because of the way the game played out. You're not going to get a whole lot of things that the books can do with in-game betting. When you're talking about a 13-3 game where there's one touchdown scored, they would prefer to have, you know, a 35-30 game where there's, you know, both teams are in it. Maybe both teams lead a couple of times throughout the course of the game. And then you get a lot more in-game betting. So as far as the overall handle, they were hamstrung just on being able to do a lot with in-game betting. And of course, that's become such a big deal now that it can make a big difference on the overall handle.
Yeah, that was the other thing I wanted to get your thoughts on is, I mean, we know the Super Bowl, it's big on prop betting and a lot of offensive prop bets too, with the over-under, you know, I think it was 300 yards for both Brady and Goff with their passing yards. Clearly that was under. I mean, a lot of the different prop bets on the offensive side, I would assume none of those really hit at all.
Yeah, I mean, there was a couple, like, you know, Gronkowski went over his receiving yards and receptions total, things like that. Of course, Edelman. Overall, the books, as far as the props were concerned, I did a show, I think it was on Tuesday, with one of the main sports books here in town, one of the sports book directors, and he said they basically made lunch money. You know, that's what they did with the props. And he said, you know, a couple hundred dollars profit, you know, basically. So it was a situation where, you know, the unders came in quite a bit on the props, but again, there was enough of those little things like Gronk over receiving yardage, Edelman with what he did with his receptions and receiving yardage that kept the books from making much of a big profit. I mean, you know, usually I'll have about 7 on average, I would guess, props in a Super Bowl, and we can usually churn out a 5-2. And Nick, I went 2-3 last week. I actually made a small profit. I made just lunch money also because my biggest play hit and my second biggest prop play hit, but I went 2-3. Overall, the top play that made the difference for me was under 6.5 ball carriers for New England, and they had 6.
Oh, okay.
And so that was my top play. So a lot of little stuff like that could have paid off, but there's not a lot of people looking at those. They're looking more at the MVP. Like Aaron Donald took a ton of MVP bets, and of course, didn't win. And so the books made their money on things like that.
Did you end up pulling the trigger on the length of the national anthem?
I did not. No, okay. I fortunately did not, because when there were two Braves at the end of the national anthem, it went over, and I would have bet the under. And it's funny because I was timing it. You know, we're all sitting around and we're timing it. And if she would have just ended with that first Brave instead of kind of adding to it, it would have gone under. And then when she, and so I'm sitting there and I'm looking at my stopwatch and I'm going, oh, yeah, it's under. Darn it, should have bet it. Then all of a sudden she dragged out the last, I don't know, 10 seconds, made it 30 seconds. And I'm like, phew. Stayed away from that one.
Scott Spritzer joining us at DocSports.com in our Views from Vegas segment. Well, Scott, do we just kind of shift our attention now squarely to college basketball? Where are you seeing a lot of the activity right now as we kind of get past football completely?
Yeah, college basketball becomes center stage. I mean, for me, I normally, college basketball is right up there. You know, it's one of my bread and butter sports. But the last few weeks, I've not done well in college basketball. The place where I've been winning like crazy since the turn of the year, since New Year's Day, has been the NBA. So I do handicap college basketball also, obviously, every single day. And but the NBA has been crazy. And it's what I like about the NBA is that it's situational. because, you know, you're talking about a bunch of college all-star teams, basically. And so for me, it becomes situational. Now, yesterday and today, we don't get as heavily involved because of all the trades that were made before yesterday's deadline. Mm-hmm. But we start kicking in again this weekend. But college basketball, what I've noticed, Nick, is, and I've talked to sportsbook directors about this, there aren't too many sportsbook directors this college basketball season who are crying right now because the sharp action is getting beat. The steam moves are getting beat on a daily basis. What I do is I handicap the games usually about 1 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. I start about 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific the night before the games. I get done about probably between 1 and 2:30 in the morning. And I always like to get out in front of it because doing this for so long, you're ahead of the line moves on about 90% of your games, 85% in that neighborhood. But those games, and when people are betting at 2 in the morning with their phone apps and offshore and things like that, that's obviously sharp action. That's not public action. Yeah. Those sharp games are just getting hammered. I mean, they're just getting beat every single day. So that's been something different this year than what we've seen over the past half dozen years or so.
Scott, a team that was one of the high or one of the best odds to win the national championship in college basketball is just really falling off. And I'm talking about Kansas and just this recent news that LeGerald Vick is going to be taking a leave of absence for at least 2 weeks with a team that already lost Udoka Azubuike. They won't have Silvio De Sousa. I got to assume those odds are pretty lengthy now for the Jayhawks.
Yeah, they're not low like they were before, and they don't really always adjust. Like, they won't say, you know, like Kansas, let's say, goes from 8-1. I'm just using an example out there without exact figures, but you won't see them drop all the time from maybe 8-1 to 30-1 or things like that. It'll drop a little bit, but what you'll see is just no action coming out of that basketball team. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened with Kansas. You know, I'm just seeing, you know, there might be some sharp money that comes in now and says, okay, we're going to get them at a good price now. You know, we're going to jump in and take a shot. But for me, I mean, I've seen this team too many times be in a situation where they're in a spot where they're coming off a non-Kansas-like performance, and in a situation where they normally wipe out the opposition, you cash your bet, and they're not getting it done. Yeah. An example of that was against Iowa State a couple of weeks ago. They were coming off a tough performance on the road. They're playing the Cyclones, and they're in a great spot to, you know, beat them probably 10 to 12 points at Phog Allen. And they win by 4, and it's a struggle all the way to the very end, and they don't cover for their backers. So yeah, they're dropping pretty fast as far as their odds and chances to win the whole thing.
Any games tomorrow that have your attention involving any of the top 25 teams, or anything that you're kind of keeping your eye on for tomorrow's action?
Yeah, no lines yet, but I do earmark games for Saturday. I start doing that usually on Thursday afternoon, and one of the games, and it's a top 10 game as far as one of the sides is concerned, this weekend that I'll be looking at is the Nevada Wolfpack taking on New Mexico. They've got one loss on the season, on the entire season, Nevada, and yet that one loss was a 27-point loss at New Mexico, which just shocked everybody because they're a legitimate top 10 team and contender for the Final Four, and New Mexico really is a garbage team. And so I know I'm going to have to lay a lot of points, but I'm going to have to hold my nose, walk to the window, Nick, and make that play because I think they're just going to whip this team by a solid 30 on Saturday. So, again, I want to see where the number comes, but when you're talking about a 21-1 top 10 team with Final Four capability and got blasted by New Mexico by 27, it's a 42-point cover for the Lobos in that game. So that's one game that jumped out at me. I'm also looking at maybe playing Mississippi State tomorrow against Kentucky. It's at Starkville, and again, we'll wait to see what the line comes, but I think Mississippi State's got a great shot to win that game by half a dozen.
It's been a sad state of affairs here locally with college basketball, Nebraska just after losing Isaac Copeland, but even before that, really starting to show some fatigue and a funk they can't get out of. Creighton is off and on, but they're getting banged up. UNO is playing, Omaha's playing some good basketball, but I mean, is it safe to say I could get a lot of value on Nebraska right now?
Yeah, but I don't know if you want to grab that value against Purdue tomorrow. You know, Omaha, by the way, I had them last night, which was an interesting game because they were up 45-35. Next thing I know, they're down by 7, and they win in overtime. I tell you what, if I was living back there, I'd be going to all those home games
before
that team plays. It looks like a blast. As far as Nebraska, I'd probably be avoiding Lincoln because, man, is that team, like you said, in a funk. I don't think they're going to come out of it. I mean, maybe there will be some life when they get to the Big Ten postseason tournament because they know it's kind of a new season. But, you know, here's the thing, and we said this months ago, on your show is, you know, I love that starting five before Copeland got hurt. I thought it was top 15 in the country starting five, but I thought the bench was about as you know, shallow as it gets. And then when Copeland got hurt, that was that. And it's really a shame that they can't put it together and win more games than they have, because this is a top 20, 25 team overall, even with the shallow bench. And I know they lose Copeland, but to see them look kind of lethargic and with flat efforts is disappointing. I grew up a huge Creighton fan. Mm-hmm. This is kind of what I expected from Creighton this year. A little bit of a rebuilding year, as did a lot of people, thought they'd be kind of towards the bottom of the Big East. And, you know, you get a game like last night, man, if they got a couple of really strong veteran leaders on the court, maybe two really strong veterans that they've had in the past few years, they probably pull out that win last night against Nova.
Yeah.
But instead, you know, it's a young rebuilding team. But Creighton is not disappointing to me. They've lost a couple of the games they could have won. But they are. They were expected to be rebuilding. Nebraska, that's just a shame. Absolute shame. And I don't know how people feel back there, but a lot of people are thinking Miles has done about as much as he can.
Yeah, it's I'll just put it this way. If you're in the Tim Miles camp, you probably want to stay away from social media.
I would bet.
it has not been too kind. Scott Spritzer, DocSports.com, our Views from Vegas segment. You can also follow him on Twitter @ScottWins. Scott, appreciate it. Happy wagering this weekend.
Thanks, Nick. Have a great one.